Ready for some great news during the holidays? Just last week, interest rates fell lower than they've been in months. This could be your chance to finally pay off all of your high interest rate credit cards and lower your monthly payments by $500, $600, $700, even $800 a month. But how much can you save? It's free to find out right now at SaveWithConrad.com. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket, and you even get to skip your next two house payments at SaveWithConrad.com.
Words are about to be spoken on The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, presented to you by the Ad Free Shows and Podcast Heat Networks. I'm John Alba, coming to you a little under the weather today, so hopefully you can deal with that. Cracking that ASMR over there, he is the broken one, woken one, spoken one himself, Mr. Matt Hardy. What you got there, man?
I got an eye drink. We're half-ass invested in the company. It's Rebecca's brother's company. This is doing well overseas, but he brought it here to America, so it's eye drink. You guys look for it. It's good. No caffeine, but an energy drink. It's for mental focus.
Well, we do like mental focus and clarity here on The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, especially because, you know, as everyone says, even as your wife put on her TikTok this past week, even you could use the mental focus and clarity coming off all those injuries, apparently.
Well, you know, my mind is deteriorating as well.
That's right.
My mind and my body.
Rapidly deteriorating, of course.
Rapidly deteriorating.
How was Christmas, man?
Christmas was great. It was the magic is still intact, you know. So that was a big success. And it was a hell of a job, like putting stuff together. Like, I feel like I was around more specifically the days before Christmas to help put stuff together and, you know, really do the Christmas act as far as that goes. It was great. And just having the kids come out and have that amazing reaction and believing and all into the Christmas spirit is great to see. So we're going to try and retain that as long as we possibly can.
Yeah. I hear the ho-ho gimmick is over in House Hardy.
Yeah. So Evie, she didn't quite catch on to Santa from the jump. She just calls him ho-ho because she knows he goes ho-ho-ho. So ho-ho is what she calls him. It is the cutest little thing ever.
Which is unfortunate because, as we know, there's no ho-hos allowed.
Definitely a different ho-ho, you know. It's you know, as there's a couple, you know, different versions of the word too. You know, you can say, like, you know, in addition, or you know, more than necessary, of whatever course. You know, like, there's a couple different ho-hos here.
Perhaps you should cue up the old peacock there and show Evie what the ho-ho train used to look like on Monday Night Raw.
There you have it, the ho-ho train. That's very, very funny.
I dig that. I'm a big Godfather guy. I know you're a big Godfather guy, mm-hmm. too. He's always over with me. I'd love to get him on the podcast at some point. Well, listen, man, this is going to be a fun one. Last week we talked about your year-end awards. I got a lot of comments about it, Matt. A lot of people were very appreciative of your unbiased takes and your ability to praise other performers in other companies and talk about how well they've been doing. And I don't know, the way I look at it, man, it's just like, you guys were all colleagues at the end of the day, right?
Sure. I mean, we all are in the same industry. We're all in the same profession at the end of the day. Yeah. I don't know, man, that tribalism stuff, that hating on one promotion and, you know, just being biased towards one. I've never been into that, really. And I think the more the merrier. I think the more successful wrestling promotions that are out there, the more successful wrestling companies, is better for everyone at the end of the day, you know. And it just gives guys another life. Whenever their run ends at one, then they can go to the other place. So I want everybody to be successful.
No doubt about it. Lots of good names are going to be active at this weekend's World's End pay-per-view for AEW. Mm-hmm. Got any picks you'd like to throw our way? Any thoughts on the card? We got Adam Copeland and Christian Cage in the no DQ match. We've got Max defending the championship against Samoa Joe. And we learned on Dynamite this week that Joe and the Devil were in cahoots the entire time. Any thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, that's how I read it. Apparently, a lot of people thought Joe was the Devil. Is that why Tony cleared that up? He just did a media call, am I correct?
He did.
Yeah. And he like clarified that in the media call, correct?
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I wonder who the two masked men were that actually won the tag titles, you know, from MJF, the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles. So I'm very curious of who that's going to be. For some reason, I have a sneaking suspicion it could be the Kingdom, but who knows? I don't know anything. I don't know any more than you, and I haven't even tried to press to know more. But I'm very curious of what the ultimate payoff and the big reveal is going to be this this Saturday at World's End.
What do you think about the Continental Classic wrapping up? It's going to be Eddie Kingston and John Moxley, friends, enemies, storied history between them. I really enjoyed the Continental Classic. I thought the matches were all great. And more than anything, Matt, I really believe that AEW did a great job telling a bunch of different stories within the context of the tournament. And now the championship match is the culmination of a several years long story.
I'm going to put you over here for a second. John Alba called this finale in the beginning. John really did. John, this is who he thought it would come down to. He thought it would be Moxley and Eddie Kingston. And I still think you almost believe that Eddie Kingston is going to win this whole thing, right? Is that kind of who you feel?
I think that this is Eddie Kingston's moment, right? Like, he wanted to be in the G1 for so long. He finally got that opportunity. He didn't do how he wanted to. And then he put the stakes out from the beginning of this tournament that he's like, if I don't win this whole thing, I will lose the one thing I had to work super hard for, which was that Ring of Honor World Championship. And now they're creating a whole new Triple Crown Championship off of this, which that's a discussion for another day. But I do think that it's a great story to see him climbing to the top after being down for so many years and then having to do it against someone who's been his best frenemy the entire time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I love that it pushes Eddie forward. I'm a big fan of Eddie Kingston. I like him both personally and professionally. So good on him. And how did he do in that G1? I didn't keep up with it whenever he was doing it. How did he do, John?
I can look up his exact results
off the top of your head.
Yeah.
Because I know whenever we were talking about it in the early stages, I know, like I said, I could see like Swerve winning or like a Jay White winning, but man, you nailed it. You were spot on.
Yeah. I don't know, man. For me, it was like, you're finding yourself telling a bunch of miniature stories. Is it, he finished with 8 points in the C block this past year. So, you know, middle of the line performance for him in that. But for me, it boils down to telling miniature stories that you are then using to develop your characters and propel them forward on your television show. Right. And discovering new layers of them. We did it with Daniel Garcia here in this tournament, who I thought Daniel Garcia, even though he won one match, had a huge coming out party in this tournament because it was all about proving to himself that he could just get that one win. And they told a good story with Matt Menard in him, Bryan Danielson coming off his injuries and playing into him basically becoming a psychopath, just so fixated after his orbital injury. The interfighting with the BCC, Jay White trying to rebuild himself coming off of his shortcomings with Max. This is good quality storytelling, Matt, that in my opinion differentiates AEW from the conventional pro wrestling storytelling that you'd see elsewhere. And I think that's good for identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I do agree with that. I think it does make AEW stand out, and I'm not opposed to that.
Just my thought on that, but the World's End pay-per-view coming up. You think Samoa Joe walks out AEW champ?
I can see it happening, but I can also not see it happening. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I feel like we've got a MJF Swerve meeting for the title, on the horizon in the future. That's what my gut tells me, but I don't know. I mean, it would not surprise me if Samoa Joe did win.
Yeah,
no one's really sure about the legitimacy of MJF's health or where he's at, whatever, So it's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be very interesting.
Yeah, you got the whole Devil story there. It is interesting, and I think wrestling is always at its best when it's a pick 'em, right? You have a hard time deciding, okay, where is this going to go?
Absolutely. When you can't predict, when you see a card that you can like predict and you predict it right, that's, you know, I feel like you need to change things up. I think your show needs to be unpredictable. So I do like that. I do like how it's unpredictable.
Certainly so. Okay, Matt, we got a lot of Ask Matt questions to get to this week. I don't want to waste any more time. Without further ado, please hit us with your Matt fact.
Matt fact, Matt has never bought an ice cream cake.
I like that one. Where'd that come from?
There was something she posted about an ice cream cake that everyone assumed that I bought it, that wasn't supposed to be gotten, and it had melted, and everyone thought it was me. So just for the record, I've never bought an ice cream cake.
She buried you over an ice cream cake that you didn't buy?
I don't think she buried me. I think it was just assumed because someone made a mistake.
She didn't clarify it, though.
No, she hasn't. She doesn't even want to talk about it. That wasn't so mean.
No Fudgy the Whale or Cookie Puss in your past?
No. I mean, not me. That would be some other senior that chose to get an ice cream cake. It would not be me. But I'll take the heat for it. Give me the heat.
That was good. That was real good. Do you like ice cream cake?
Do I?
Yeah.
No, but like she had was getting it for a birthday and then like it melted because those things have to stay in the fridge. It was hit or whatever. So that's why. Yeah, it was the wrong cake. Get the wrong cake.
That is outstanding. I love that. All right, let's get to all these great questions that so many of our fans gave us. And we're going to talk about the Iron Claw off the bat here, because that was a question that we got from a few people, Matt.
I'm sure.
And I will ask it from Melanie. She says, have you watched The Iron Claw?
I have. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought they did an excellent job telling the story of Von Erickson. I know there was stuff moved around timetable wise. And I know some of the, you know, there was a brother that wasn't even included in the movie. And some of the other events were kind of left out, whatever. But like, guys, they had 2 hours and a little change. That's a lot of storytelling. I mean, to include all of those things, I feel like you need much, much more time. So I was good. I was good with what they did. I thought it packed a very powerful punch. And it really was like, it came off as just a really sad, hard tragedy that the whole Von Erich family was.
Yeah. I think the thing with the movie was you're appealing to an audience. It is quite literally the casual audience that probably doesn't know the Von Erich story in great detail, if at all. And for me, I love the movie. Mm-hmm. One of the more interesting facets of him, Matt, was looking around at the audience around me and seeing how they were reacting to these personal tragedies that they probably had no idea were coming.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, my wife knew that there was some death involved, but just like once things just started escalating and, you know, the snowball started rolling down the hill and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and more tragic. She was just like, whoa, like, you know, she thought the movie was done well, but the actual story of the Von Erichs and just the way the dad was putting pressure on the kids and just all the tragedy that surrounded them all dying, you know, with the exception of Kevin. She was just like, that's the worst movie I've ever seen just because of that story and the tragic nature behind it.
Yeah. And it's all real. I thought all the acting was excellent in it. I got to ask you about the Ric Flair portrayal that everyone on the internet's talking about. What'd you think?
It's funny because most people were pretty close. You know, they either resembled or they, you know, kind of had it down really good as far as the character they were playing specifically. Like, you know, the Von Erichs, I thought they were, they really picked good actors and I thought they turned in good performances. And, you know, even like the more I've watched that back, I watched that a couple of times this morning at the airport, actually, before flying back home. And it's just like, it was very much not like Rick. I feel like it could have been closer, but at the end of the day, I feel like someone that is a casual fan that doesn't give a shit about pro wrestling, it doesn't make a difference to those people, you know, and you get the point behind it. I think the people who probably got their panties in a wad more than anybody else, or just diehard wrestling fans. Like, come on, I can do a Ric Flair impersonation better than that, or, you know, whatever. So it's one of those things. It would have been nice if it would have been sounded and looked more like Ric Flair in some ways, and had the bravado that, you know, Ric Flair has the charisma Ric Flair has, and says woo the way he says woo, because this guy didn't necessarily do that. But I mean, he was a representation of a character, and it was like a little fun character.
Yeah, I think the part of the problem was, like you said, they did nail a lot of the other people in the movie. But for whatever reason, Rick was not. It really doesn't matter. I thought the aesthetic of the movie was great. And the last thing I'll ask you on it, I felt like the presentation of the pro wrestling world was the most honest that wrestling has ever been presented on film before. The Wrestler back in 2009 was excellent as well with that. But I thought this really captured what pro wrestling at its essence is, and explained it in a way that was digestible for a more casual person. What do you think about that?
I totally agree with that. I mean, I think if you're someone who has never watched pro wrestling one day in your life, I think you watch this movie and you're like, that was an amazingly made movie, and it was a hell of a story. And like, I dig it. You know what I mean? So you didn't have to, it wasn't made for like niche wrestling fans. It was made for everyone. And I like the fact that they, you know, changed the timeline, like with Carrie's injury and his foot, you know, some of that was changed, but I feel like it was changed to make the most impact. And it still kind of still kept a truth to the story and about the challenges he went through and the pain and everything else. So you know, I don't get upset about all that. I know some of the diehard wrestling fans, even I put the movie over, you know, like, are you kidding me? They did this and Kerry Von Erich was 5'9" and blah, blah, blah. And this, and then this wasn't factual and this didn't happen on the right timeline. They're like, dude, it's also movie making business, brother.
Well, and it's based off a true story. It's not the true story. It's based off a true story. That's what you have to remember. Ultimately, the aesthetic ruled. Seeing the sportatorium.
It did. The sportatorium stuff was great. The action that they provided in the ring, the clips and snippets, oh, that was great. The graphics when they put up the world class stuff just felt, it just took you back to that time, right, of the old days. And I loved all that, and I did. I give it 5 Cinco 5 Cinco 5 stars. I dug the movie.
I love it. We got one from Austin. What is one match you enjoy but doesn't get the credit it deserves? His would be John Cena versus Umaga at the Royal Rumble 2007. We did a tape study of that match on my Patreon, WrestlingAccordingToAlba.com, and that is a fantastic, underrated match, no doubt. Do any stand out to you, whether it's one of your own or someone else's match?
I mean, and I've said this before. I mean, the first thing that stands out whenever I hear that about being underrated, not getting the credit it deserves, I go to that Last Man Standing match between me and, you know, EC3. Whenever we did the double turn and I turned heel and he became a babyface and I won the title. That's to me, the match that I've been involved in, I feel like that's the one that doesn't get the credit it truly deserves. Maybe it will at time. We'll see. As far as other matches that I have seen that I thought were really good, and I mean, I was a big fan of, I think it gets a lot of credit, but once again, because it's cinematic, like the diehard wrestling fans aren't necessarily going to, you know, always be down with it because they want to see their stuff in the ring live and in front of them. I thought the Undertaker's final cinematic match that he had, you know, with those guys in the Good Brothers. The Boneyard. I thought that was really good. I thought that was a great thing. And I mean, I love the fact that he got to go out on that note. And I thought it was a great piece of cinema.
Yeah, I think the Boneyard match is awesome. Definitely go out of your way to watch that if you never have. Speaking of more cinematic stuff, Gladys asks, who does Matt Hardy want to play him and Jeff in the biopic on their lives?
Yeah, that's a hell of a question. I mean, I'd almost say sign Zac Efron up, you know, because he did such a great job as Kevin. Yeah, he was amazing. And now that he kind of understands the whole wrestling, but I mean, because I feel like you kind of have to do a little homework, and you kind of have to understand the ins and outs of pro wrestling to really be able to nail, you know, like a character down like that, who's been involved in that, who's like made a life, you know, that's been their life for 32 years as it has been for mine right now, you know? So, I would say him, and he's at a good age where I think he could do it too.
Who's playing Jeff?
It'd be interesting. Who would we have play Jeff? Brad Pitt. We'll just get him to reverse it and put it away.
Honestly, you want to talk about someone who would immerse themselves completely into a role playing this kind of out there Jeff Hardy, you know, a free spirit? Probably Jared Leto.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good call, yeah.
Jared Leto would encompass that free-spirited Jeff Hardy, the rock star.
Right.
I know he's a controversial actor, but I think he would
I'm with you. I agree.
So we're calling on Zac Efron to start doing some swantons and shit?
You know, he can do the twist. He didn't have to do the swanton. Okay. Send crazy-ass Jared up. We'll get him a crash pad.
That's good. That's good stuff. There was another question, too, because I thought one of the things that popped me most in the movie was seeing the Freebirds.
Yeah.
And I just love seeing, like, the guy that was clearly supposed to be Michael Hayes. He had the 5 o'clock shadow and the long hair. I was like, okay, they did a pretty good job there. Ari asks, Freebirds versus Hardys in their primes. Who goes over and how would the match be put together?
Oh my God. I would, that'd be a dream come true, without a doubt. You know, we did get to do one Hardys versus Freebird match. Are you familiar with this, that we had that match, Sean, myself and Jeff, after our run with Michael? We wrestled Michael and Terry.
Yes, Oklahoma. We talked about that on our Michael Hayes episode, I believe.
We did, right. We did. But to wrestle those guys in the prime, like Terry Gordy was so incredible, especially in his prime, you know, when he was up and, I mean, he was just a machine, a workhorse, just someone that you didn't want to fuck with, you know, one way or the other, like, you know, who was like a legitimate badass. Michael was the charisma. Buddy was one of the big workhorses. If we were going to have that match in our prime, we'd probably go back and forth. I could see some stuff. You know, maybe the Hardys get a win over these guys, then they start screwing us over and they get their win back, and then we end up having some extreme no DQ street fight, and that's how we blow it off, where Team Extreme, the Hardys, end up getting the win over the final Freebird, over the Fabulous Freebirds to blow this thing off.
I think the Jeff Hardy, Michael Hayes stare down, the two rock stars together, would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, getting that, yeah.
Getting that moment out of that. We got a good one from Ed. When WCW Cruiserweights were winning for 83 weeks, maybe a bit before Helms and Moore got to WCW, were you or WCW ever interested in the Hardys trying WCW in 97 or early 98? When were those early WWF contracts up, and was there ever a window of possibility to jump over and be part of that division?
We had sent tapes and we had spoke to people at WCW, but there wasn't a lot of headway there. There was much more headway and opportunity at WWF at the time, just because we were doing jobs with them, and we weren't offered contracts till like the end of 1997, and we didn't sign till the early 1998. So we didn't have a contract while we were doing work as extras, just for the clarification. And it almost sounded like they thought maybe we had a contract or we were contractually obligated to work with WWE, but we weren't. We were just freelance people at that point. As far as the WCW thing goes, not really. We just didn't have as good of an in there, or we didn't have as many contacts as we did at WWE, because we'd been around. We'd done jobs. We'd enhanced people, and like a lot of the WWE roster liked us. But there was some buzz from ECW, and if we hadn't have signed with WWE at that time, we would have probably ended up going to ECW before we went to WWF.
Were you weary of going anywhere else while you were still getting the extra work? Because the way I see it, it's like, sure, you're technically a freelancer, you're not under a full-time contract, but if we show up somewhere else, they might not bring us back again.
Yeah, I mean, that was an issue too. We didn't want to rub WWF the wrong way, because once again, they had brought us back regularly. Like, we started with the Italian Stallion and George South, and then once we got away with them, you know, I was the guy that did our booking, and it was myself, Jeff, Jason Arndt, Joey Abs, and first name Sham, last name Payne, Marty Garner, you know, and we would be booked every 3 or 4 months or so.
Top guy Josh, big fan of the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy.
My man Josh
says, is there such a thing as a good time or age to retire from pro wrestling? When you're finally in the wheelchair, sarcasm, any thoughts of what to do in retirement? I hope you have many years left. I hope you both had a blessed Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Josh. I hope you had a nice Christmas, and wishing you the best for the new year as well. I don't know. Once again, I've said this a lot. I'll just let my body tell me. It's like I'm still at that point where I can go out and I can turn in a respectable performance. You know, obviously people that are the diehards online on wrestling Twitter and stuff, they get very frustrated. Like, give it up, Jericho. Give it up, Hardys, you know, whatever. And I was talking about this with, you know, Scotty Too Hottie, Scott Garland last night. He actually wrestled in an 8-man tag in the opening dark match, which was very cool to see. We've been friends for a long, long time, right? Over 25 years. We met him initially in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, when it snowed and they had to postpone the WWE taping to the next day when we were all doing extra work, right? But he just said, like, we're the last of the Attitude Era. You know, it's like myself, Jeff, Adam, Jay, Edge and Christian, Jericho, you know, and even threw himself in there. Like, really, there's only a few guys. Like, in 4 or 5 years from now, there's not going to be any left that are still doing that. Billy Gunn actually fits in there, too, because he was in that match as well last night. And it's just like, we have so much equity for being on TV in this, you know, in the hottest period in wrestling history. And it's just, it's very important, I feel, to find a way to use those legends in a correct way. And I think there's a lot of benefit and a lot of equity, especially if you have people that are willing to work with everybody else and help elevate other young talent around them. So as far as when I will retire, I'll let my body dictate it. I love doing this, and it's just like, I'm still kind of living out my dream. So I want to do that as long as I can.
Especially when you're a living legend like the Hardys.
You damn right. A living legend. I mean, like, 3/4, I might even up that number to 85%. 85% of that locker room, we were their childhood. And we probably motivated them to, you know, chase the pro wrestling dream. You know, so, like, we're responsible for AEW. We kind of created that style in Omega in the beginning.
You know? What a service you did to the wrestling community.
Well, it's just another great benevolent kindness I gave the wrestling world. I've given them many over the last 32 years.
You certainly have. Got a couple good ones from Joaquin here. Says, besides defeating The Undertaker clean without any help from Brock Lesnar, what would be your favorite moment as a single star all throughout your wonderful career?
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
A big moment, and this was a big moment for both myself and Jeff, was being in one of the marquee matches for WrestleMania 25, whenever we got to have the Extreme Rules match, myself versus Jeff. And I would say even getting the win on Jeff in that match, that was one of the biggest moments of my career. As a singles competitor, I'm undefeated at WrestleMania, just for the record. I just thought you should know, John.
I even get the Battle Royal win, too.
I just thought you should know.
Yeah, well, that's what, you're a living legend, so obviously I knew that.
Yes.
He also asked, do you think that Woken Matt Hardy would have been different? Would it have worked if it was under the Triple H WWE?
That's a hell of an intriguing question. I think it would have definitely been different, and I think there would have been a much better chance of it working. I would have loved to have seen Woken Matt and Bray connect and get together as the leaders of the world and have Triple H's creative behind it. That would have been a lot of fun. I mean, I think he got stuff. There was one particular scene that we did where we had a thing where there was this tag match with the two top contenders, and they were like, they did a double down in the ring, and they were both like crawling for the tag, and like the lights went out, and then these guys were off the apron, and then Bray and I were in the corners where the tag teams are, and I think we're going to a three-way or something like that. And I'm like, oh shit, you know, like it was a very cool visual though. But that was Triple H's idea, and he said, yeah, I've been thinking about doing this for a while. I think your guys' characters are perfect for it. And that was one thing that I really dug. I liked his mindset. I think he got what we were trying to accomplish.
No planetariums?
No, he never talked about a planetarium. Sadly.
Go check out our original Bray Wyatt episode and Woken Matt Hardy for an all-time great Vince McMahon story in the archives, extremehardy.com. Well, speaking of Bray, Jeff wants to know, give us a Bray Wyatt story that we've never heard before. I'm sure we're all still hurting from the loss. It's still great to hear stories about him.
Man, I'll never forget. Whenever he was first dating JoJo, we actually went out after a show in Savannah, Georgia, and grabbed a bite to eat, and I kind of got smartened up to the whole thing. So that was cool that he kind of put that faith in me, that they were hanging out and doing the thing, whatever, and just had a real good time, real good dinner. I don't think I've ever told that story at all. It's like right when they were getting a little more serious with one another.
So just that he put his trust in you, that fortified your bond kind of thing?
I think so, yeah. And I just remember we had a great night. We had it was just one of those real nice times where you go out and eat and you have great conversation and just a nice evening.
Love to hear that. Man, I was doing our year review on Strictly Business, and I was just thinking about Bray and how crazy it is that he's gone. But
yeah,
the amazing thing about it is the outpouring of support, universal support from the pro wrestling industry for Bray. And I thought you did a wonderful tribute to him that, again, is available in our archives. Should you guys like to check that out, extremehardy.com.
It is. It's one to go out of your way to catch, I think. I mean, it was very much from the heart and someone who I love talking about because of someone that I loved, and we shared so many similarities creatively, you know, so definitely check that out. That's a Extreme Life of Matt Hardy episode you don't want to miss.
Good one from Gabriel. As a tag team veteran, who do you think is the future of tag team wrestling? Now, Matt, there's a very famous story here about my boy Bruce Springsteen, and when back in the mid-70s, mm-hmm. He was proclaimed to be in a publication the next Bob Dylan. He was the future of rock and roll, and it was something that stuck with him for many years to come. So I'm asking you to pick one tag team here, Matt Hardy. Who is the future of tag team wrestling?
That's a really interesting question, especially when you talk about young guys. I mean, the people I think currently right now are on the best run of their career and are doing great stuff is FTR. But I mean, they're not necessarily the future. They're the present. You know, I think they're going to be a top tag team for a little while to come, obviously. But as far as young tag teams go, man, I'm even trying to think of, I'm out of the loop, man.
Let's break it down here. Got in AEW alone, you got Top Flight.
Yeah.
You got Private Party, who obviously you're very high on. We know mm-hmm. that. You got Aussie Open when they're all fully healthy. And we know Kyle mm-hmm. Fletcher's having a lot of singles success right now himself.
Right.
On the WWE end, you got the Creed brothers who are coming up from NXT and just made their debut on the main roster.
How are those guys?
They were going to be my answer, honestly. I think they are unbelievable. And they're still very, I don't like using this term, but they're still in the traditional sense of it, green, in the sense that they haven't been doing it that long.
Right.
But, you know, once they put those little things together, I think they're amazing. Julius Creed in particular has, like, a Kurt Angle level ceiling as far as what he's capable of doing athletically.
So I've heard these guys are like outstanding athletes, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So once you start putting all those things together, you know, everything starts to click, right?
Right.
It's just, for me, it's like tag team wrestling. And I want to piggyback. I want to find this question here because this can relate to that. Emperor Skyboy asked, what is one thing you want to see new and up and coming tag teams do differently to make the future of tag team wrestling better? Because I think those two questions can go hand in hand.
Yeah, they do. I want to see them focus more on just like keeping the match in the context of a tag team match, like from a psychology standpoint, especially like, you know, there's that old theory of like, this will never change, like cutting the ring in half, especially when someone's isolated, like try and keep him on the side, try and stop him from making the tag. Because I feel like in the last few years, we've kind of gotten away from a lot of that. Like the Brainbusters, Arn and Tully, they were amazing. Huge amazing. Fans of their work and of their style. Midnight Express, another team that was great. You know, Rock and Roll Express, they were on the other side of the coin because they were the team that were always the babyface and they were trying to struggle to get that tag. But I would like to see us kind of get back to a tag team psychology where we really make it a point to emphasize that this is a tag team match. And once we get one guy isolated, we need to keep him in our corner. We need to keep him in trouble and we need to keep him away, as opposed to making it into a bigger athletic contest, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And of all those tag teams you mentioned, I am not up on the Creed Brothers, but I like your description, what you're saying about them. Aussie Open, I think they have the potential to be the future of tag team wrestling for a long time, because I feel like they do. They're very solid, like from a foundation of like psychology wise, as far as working. And then on top of that, they can do all the modern day new age stuff too.
And both the guys in the Acclaimed are still super young too.
Right.
To say where they can take things is plus, you know, you go across the Indies. There's just so many. Above the Rest is a team that comes to mind for me. Violence is Forever. There's a lot of really good indie tag teams out there that I really enjoy. So go check out the scene, man. Watch as much tag team wrestling as you can, because I stand by it. Like, good tag team wrestling will get over with any crowd. Any Agreed. Crowd.
Yeah.
There's just something so easily digestible mm-hmm. about that struggle of someone reaching for the ropes trying to get their partner in, right? It's just yeah. so easy to connect.
It is. It's much easier to tell a story in a tag team match than a singles match. And that's one thing I've always enjoyed about tag team wrestling as well, too.
You got 20,000 people at a pay-per-view in attendance going nuts for a match they've seen a million times layout-wise, just because it right. translates so easily. And if you, hypothetically speaking, want to be part of 20,000 people at a pay-per-view, you go to Game Time and you download the Game Time app and you enter that promo code Hardy, and we're going to get you there, aren't we, Matt Hardy?
We sure are. You just type in HARDY, that promo code, and we're going to save you some money. On top of Game Time saving you money.
It's the absolute most tangible product that we could chill out to you guys here, because I really do believe that we all love a good shared human experience. It's one of the best things ever. When you go to an event, you go to a sporting event, you go to a concert, you go to a theater show, you go to a wrestling event, and you have that experience with everyone around you that allows you to lose yourself and immerse yourself in it. You shouldn't have to worry about buying tickets to gain that experience. But with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their best price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. We are now on the home stretch of the holiday season, Matt. It's still the time to be given, and I see no reason why you can't give a belated Christmas gift or holiday gift to someone who maybe underperformed a little bit at the holidays, right, Matt? Maybe yeah. there's a way to make it up to someone. How can Game Time help you do that?
They can hook you up, whatever you want to go to, whether it is pro wrestling, whether it is a sporting event, whether it is a concert, whether it is Paw Patrol Live. You know, I might buy tickets to any of those things, but they can get you the best deal. They'll tell you where the ticket is. They'll clearly show you the view you're going to be watching from. And then on top of all that, there are no hidden fees. It's one and done, guys.
The all-in pricing really gets the job done for you. I know you know a thing or two about digging yourself out of the doghouse and getting someone tickets to a show or an event that they want to go to, that's going to help you, won't it?
Absolutely. This is the way to go. And it's never the wrong time to give someone the gift of tickets, especially through Game Time.
With Zone Deals, you pick the section, Game Time picks the seats for big time savings. And the Game Time guarantee means you're always going to get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section or row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code HARDY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem code HARDY, H-A-R-D-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. And I want to thank Game Time for their year-long sponsorship with us here at the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. We're very, very appreciative, are we not?
We are very grateful. Thank you, Game Time. We love working with Game Time, and we love promoting Game Time. It's a great company, and they offer great deals. And everyone, please take advantage of Game Time. It's a win-win.
Michael wants to know, what is your best and worst travel story?
I would say my best travel story was when I was going to Santiago to work for Hugo in a match. And we came down 5 days early, and then we spent 4 days over in Easter Island. And that was just the most magical place I've ever been to. It's a place I want to go to and take all my kids now that, you know, they're a little bigger and stuff. I still want to travel there again when the time is right. But it was just myself and my wife and Maxwell whenever we went initially. But that is the best travel / vacation / destination I've ever been to. So I would consider that my best travel experience. Even though the trip was long to get there, it was still good. And it was a hugely memorable, and it's an indelible moment.
I feel like your worst travel story changes week to week.
Sometimes I feel like that it's going to be hard to top this story. That was just whenever the volcanic ash happened over in the UK. You know, and we'd canceled our last show that we were supposed to go to. And then we drove, which ended up being 24 hours because there wasn't a bus we could get or whatever. It was almost like a small van, a smaller, a little bigger sized van. And then like a shuttle, a hotel shuttle. And like these things were going so slow as we were going up and down the mountains. We drove for... We almost missed the flight because we drove to the furthermost point of Spain, if I'm not mistaken, just so we could catch our flight and get out, or they'd hooked us up with. And then we got on a plane from there and flew back across the Atlantic, and we came back to New Jersey, landed, all got our bags, and went straight to the building to do Raw. So the SmackDown crew was filling in for Raw because Raw was stuck over there. So we got out of Europe at the last possible moment that we could. And we made it back just in time. It was 36 hours of hell.
That's exhausting too. That's going to sit with you for a week or two.
Business as usual. You know, we did that, and then we did our show the next day, and then back on the road the following weekend. You know,
nuts.
No rest for the weary when you're in the mix like that.
Derek asks, "What are your favorite bands and songs right now?"
Not a lot of stuff changes as far as bands. I don't keep up with new music like a lot of people do. I think I'm kind of past that now. Kind of aged out. I mean, there'll be times where I hear like a song here and there that's new and it's catchy and I dig it. I mean, currently right now, my favorite bands are still Kings of Leon, Pearl Jam, Tool. That's, you know, most of the stuff you're going to see. I'll hear like a song that I'll specifically see, like on YouTube, I'll watch tribute videos for like different series, television series I've liked or whatever. And sometimes I'll pick up a song and like, oh shit, I got to download that, whatever it may be. But yeah, I have a list. I don't listen to stuff currently and new. If I stumble upon something and I end up liking it, that's when I download it. But I don't actively try and seek out new stuff. So pretty much same old, same old.
I got to get you, because there are a lot of great bands out there that are newer and emulate right. A lot of the sounds that you love. I got to get you hooked on a couple of them. Gaslight Anthem, specifically.
Yeah. And I've got to check those out. I know you've been a big advocate of them.
Big Gaslight guy. Yep. Mm-hmm. Gaslight. I'm surprised you're not as into Foo Fighters as I thought you'd be. I know you like them, but like, I think that's a band you probably would really, really get into. With.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I have a lot of love for Foo Fighters, but you're right. I don't put them at the top of my list.
Like
I
normally. Yeah, it's cool, man. I was a guest on E Street Radio, Springsteen Sirius XM channel.
Very cool for you, yeah.
It was awesome. And it was at the Transparent Clinch Gallery in Asbury Park. And Danny Clinch is this famous rock photographer who's worked with all these amazing names. And his whole gallery is just filled with these incredible pictures. And there were a ton of Pearl Jam pictures. I sent you one of them.
Yeah.
He was talking about some Pearl Jam stories, which I thought was really cool. And, man, that's still just for me. Music is the most amazing outlet, especially right. when you're traveling. You need something like that to lean on. So let's see here, Matt. We got more. Sean asking, have you thought about looking into an acting career?
Not necessarily. You know, I'm still doing wrestling where I can do it. But, I mean, I think that would be – it'd be a cool change of pace, especially how you have to get a lot more subtle and kind of tune it down a notch because wrestling, we played it. Everybody in the venue and there's a lot of overacting in pro wrestling, obviously, but no, I dig that. And I think it is very fun. Oh, here we go. Skipping this one call real quick. I'll call you back, brother.
Look at that.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
And so did Devon about, yeah.
There you go.
but yeah, I
acting.
Yeah, acting. Thank you. That's my mindset. I totally forgot about the Devon thing in my mind. Totally deleted everything else. Yes, acting. No, I haven't thought about it a lot, but do I think it would be something to be fun to experiment with later on? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Good one from Daniel here. Super Nintendo or Sega?
Super Nintendo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any game in particular stand out to you?
I mean, I was just, when the first Nintendo came out, like with the Mario Brothers craze and, you know, where you open the little deal, slide it in. What was that? Super Nintendo NES?
NES.
Right. I mean, that was like my peak of video games. So we had an Atari 2600. I remember we got that for Christmas one year and we were all big onto that. And then like eventually one of my friends had got this Nintendo NES and we were able to get one for a birthday or Christmas or whatever it was. And that was just like the ultimate. I remember we would save up money to buy those games and put the cartridge in and play that. And that's pretty much after that, I kind of fell off from video games. I didn't really play video games any much.
Sega had some good stuff. Yeah, obviously Sonic's a classic, but there were a lot of great games that came out in the mid '90s, early '90s period, right before the PlayStation boom and into. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nintendo 64 was such a game changer, and God, man, I played the shit out of WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy, specifically playing with the Hardy Boys too. And actually, my friend got me as a gift. Let's see if I can snag this here real quick without knocking my whole setup over. But they found the WCW versus NWO World Tour playthrough book.
Look at that.
That has like all the like character informations, and it's actually in really, really good shape. And I showed Eric Bischoff how he looked in this, and he wasn't too thrilled.
He wasn't thrilled
with his 1998 video game self. But yeah, man, it was such a great period growing up. Here he is. Let's see.
Where's Eric?
For those watching on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy YouTube channel. I don't know if you can see.
Oh, there you go. He didn't like himself. He looks too woke. That's why I didn't like it, man. He looks too woke.
For the small 10% crossover audience of Strictly Business and the Extreme Life.
They'll pop for that.
They're
going
to appreciate that one.
Yeah.
That was really good. We got a few more to get to here. So let's keep going. Let's see. Anthony, if things hadn't soured with Impact, where do you think you would have taken the Broken Universe after the Expedition of Gold, Great Wars, etc.? Were there further plans for the characters already in mind that you're willing to share? Your creativity and stories y'all were telling really reignited my passion for pro wrestling.
I mean, I feel like we've said this a few times. If we would have continued, we were going to do an interpromotional angle between House Hardy and the Bucks of Youth. That's kind of where the plan was. We'd had TNA and Ring of Honor in agreement to work at interpromotional angle. That was what was on the table. You know, obviously things changed. I personally wanted to continue to like dip in and out of Broken Matt and like continue to evolve them, much like how Broken Matt went on for a while. Then there was like Matt with amnesia where I didn't know who I was. And then Broken Matt comes back. And then I went into the, God, what do you even call, whenever I went back to my first vessel, the Egyptian, that version, I want to keep cycling in and out different versions of Broken Matt, where just like you would have enough time away from the Broken Matt character that you would like want him back. You would miss him enough, you know, give 6 or 8 weeks of doing something else for like, oh man, I want to see crazy ass Broken Matt back again. So that is what I wanted to continue to do. There was talk, and I'd mentioned this before on the podcast as well, about me even doing something, having another world title run as a Broken Matt. But then I just said, like, he doesn't really need the title. That just doesn't really work. And there are guys I feel like I could elevate. And one of the guys was LA Knight, Eli Drake at that time that we talked about. I thought he would have been a great guy to kind of be the champion at that time. And it would have helped him out greatly.
Him playing the straight man against Broken Matt would have been really entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been good stuff. I was going to ask you that, like the longevity of the character. Did you see an end game? It almost sounds like you viewed it as kind of like the Hulk, where the Hulk comes in and out of, you know, Bruce Banner becomes in and out of being the Hulk. And it sounds somewhat similar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was like the King in Gold. That's what I actually called my first vessel whenever I was doing that. And I had the Egyptian War. I just wanted to keep like reverting to like different parts of Broken Matt's past and like just make the character fresh again. But then like crowds would reminisce just the original Broken Matt. Sure. Like, oh my God, we want him back or whatever. And it just felt like it would keep everything fresh.
Wayne, I have a local question. I live in Asheboro. What is your favorite go-to date restaurant when you're home? Looking for an idea for a surprise date with my wife.
There you go. I mean, if I'm here and I'm going to Southern Pines, Southern Prime Steakhouse, which is a top-of-the-line steakhouse. So good. You would love it. You'd love that, John. And also Beef Eaters, which I'm a huge fan of. Beef Eaters, it's a local place in Southern Pines with local owners, but it's been one of the top restaurants for, God, 30 years. So those are the two that I would recommend, Southern Prime and Beef Eaters in Southern Pines, North Carolina.
Good stuff. Matt, after seeing videos of wrestlers attempting diving attacks but over under jumping and completely missing their opponents, I wondered, how difficult is it to judge the distance between yourself and your opponent when you're standing on the top rope or on top of a ladder or a cage in order to deliver a perfect landing move?
I mean, I feel like the younger you are, probably the easier it is because you've probably been less beat up and your brain's probably been less scrambled. But it's still not terribly difficult, I don't feel like. I mean, if you're a pretty decent athlete, I feel like it's not too challenging, not too hard. And just hopefully the guy is kind of staying in the same spot. That's very important as well, you know, because one of those things, like if you dive at someone and they're like starting to walk in as soon as you jump, that's where, you know, accidents happen and whatnot. It was always a little trickier with a moonsault, you know, especially when you're going backwards and you're trying to guess how far to get to make sure your knees clear the guy and you don't just like knee the guy in the ribs and like break his ribs. Those were always challenging, but I always, especially being younger, whenever I was more flexible and a little more mobile, I enjoyed doing all of those things.
Was there ever a time you overcompensated or undercompensated?
There was one time where I was jumping off the top and I want to say Perry Saturn had started drifting like to the left and I jumped and I was like trying to like, and I end up hitting him like with my arm. And it was just like that same scenario I was just talking about. He was kind of like, I'd climbed up to the top and he was in one place. I think it was during the hardcore title era when all that stuff was going around. And I come jumping off the top and he just kind of like has drifted to the left a little bit. So it's just like, I hit him with the arm type deal as opposed to like being a regular body block.
Good one from Marie here. As someone who's been working in the wrestling business for more than 30 years now, what would be your favorite era? Not as a spectator, but as someone who's really living it.
My favorite era?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, personally, my the most fun I've ever had, and I say this all the time, and I will ad nauseum, was the broken Matt Hardy time at TNA. That was the most fun, and it was just really really a great time overall. And it was just like I had my wife with me the majority of the time. I had my first son with me, and we got to share these experiences, which meant a lot. The Attitude Era, whenever we first started on the road, I mean, that was probably the most amazing era and atmosphere I've been into, because every night was sold out. I mean, we would do 10 nights on the road, and every single night was sold out. You know, it'd be a Wednesday night, a Tuesday night, a Monday night, whatever, and there's 20,000 people in the venue. Every night was sold out, literally, for a couple years whenever we started, until like the business slowed down a little bit. So that was a pretty amazing era, because you knew you were going to be going out as a young kid, newly signed, in front of 20,000 people, 14,000 people, 11,000 people, 17,000 people, however big the venue was. But you knew it was a guaranteed sellout every single night.
From Brad, big fan of the Extreme Life, of course. Shout out to Brad. Do you have a favorite sitcom?
I've had this with you. Like, I've got to get more into sitcoms. Mm-hmm. I've never been like a huge sitcom guy. I like to sit back and watch kind of comedies or lighthearted stuff or whatnot. I would probably even say of stuff I've watched, maybe I watched some Cheers back in the day. Maybe like a Cheers or a Frasier, but I've never been like a loyal, okay, dedicated sitcom.
I'm going to help you out.
Or follower.
Okay. You're going to get into Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's on, yep, Max. Okay. There's a character on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and anyone, uh-huh, who's listened to this and watches Curb knows her name is Susie Essman. She is your wife.
Oh yeah.
Okay? Oh yeah. And you wait and you'll watch it. And you'll say, oh my God, I'm staring at Rebecca.
If that she was a white Jewish woman. That kind of motivates me to watch it.
Oh yeah. Big time. It's to me the smartest comedy ever written. It's an unbelievable show. I mean, they're going into their final season now in February.
Right.
But it's been on the air since 2000. So put that into perspective, just how the quality of the longevity that has. Go out of your way, watch it, and report back to me when you discover Susie for the first time.
Is Susie, is she right from the jump? Is she in, is she episode one?
She's in the show from close to the beginning. Curb is one of those shows where it kind of takes like two seasons to get into like the real weeds of the characters finding themselves and everything. But when you realize who she is, it's like watching Rebecca Hardy. It's pretty amazing. Cool. And I mean that complimentary, because Susie is probably in my top two characters in the show. So,
okay.
Color
me intrigued.
That and JB Smooth's Leon is just on a whole nother level. It's amazing stuff. Absolutely fantastic. Probably a lot of Curb fan. I know, I'm pretty sure Tony Khan's a big Curb Your Enthusiasm fan. He's tweeted about Curb before.
He's used the GIFs.
Yeah, he's big on the demo for Curb, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. We got Too Sweet. Would you put Cookout Burgers up there with the In-N-Out and Whataburger Burgers?
I would put Cookout Burgers up there. I think Cookout Burgers are very good. They're flame grilled. And I feel like I'm a little biased because I'm here and I have the ability to get them quite often. I do love In-N-Out burgers. I almost feel like it's a ritual. I need to have like an In-N-Out burger whenever I go to California, especially if I'm making that long trip. I do like their secret sauce. Same thing with Whataburger. I love to get their bowl, you know, the Whataburger bowl. And I love all those burgers, but yes, I would put Cookout there. If you are in the South, you need to check out Cookout. Try Cookout Burger.
Last one here, and I want to finish it from Brad. He had another one. As a father of multiple children, how do you set individual time for each aside?
You just make it work. And sometimes the time is, shared. Sometimes you're giving individual time to two kids at once or whatever. Like right now I'm getting ready to take Wolfie and Barty to jiu-jitsu. So I'll be spending time with both of them. And it's kind of like singles, individual time with them, but they share that same bond that they do jiu-jitsu and they enjoy it and whatnot. But as far as individually, I think there's different times where if you know you're doing something that one specific kid would like, you try and get him to tag along or be involved with you and do it. You, whatever their interest is, stuff that they're into, if you're doing something that is close to that or something they're interested or intrigued in, I think have them tag along and be part of it.
Great advice, fatherly advice. I know you got to get going over to jiu-jitsu right now, but I want to just say a couple things off the gate. Number one, as we remind everyone every single week, we'd love for you to be part of this show in 2024. Yep. AdvertiseWithHardy.com is the place to go promote your business to the extreme. Get your product out in front of thousands of listeners every single week. You're going to hear a few new ad partners from us in the coming weeks here on The Extreme Life. We're grateful for them. We would love to have you on our team. Matt, we are headed into 2024. Any New Year's resolution or happy words you'd like to share with everyone as we sign off?
A new year always feels like a fresh start. It's a chance to begin again. And I think that's what life is. Every single day is one of those. It's a chance to begin again, to start again. I don't want to get too hung up on New Year's and just saying you have to do it then because you can do it whenever. But it is good. I like how it's like a clean reset. You know, it's a clean slate, so to say. So we have 2024, and I'm excited about that. And I look forward to New Year's, and I look forward to trying to just getting your shit together and being better.
It also means we'll be moving on to year three of The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, which is crazy. And you guys were in Orlando this past week, which is where you and I got together for the first time and kind of laid this out. So just so cool, man. So cool. And I hope everyone has a great and happy and healthy New Year.
Yes.
And we are wishing you nothing but the best from us here at The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. We hope to be part of your routine next year as well. So the words have been spoken. This has been The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. We will see you next time.
Happy New Year, everyone. Let's kick in 2024. Let's bring it in with a bang. And with that, delete! Yeah.